Bookstore Explorer is brought to you in part by the Bookshop Bungalow at Plot Twist Books. Have you ever wanted to spend the night in a bookstore? With the Bookshop Bungalow, now you can. Located just minutes from Charleston, West Virginia, the Bookshop Bungalow is a book lover's retreat, a private room inside an actual working bookshop. Each stay comes with a used book credit, employee pricing on new books and gifts, and an honorary staff pick of your choice added to our inventory. Learn more and book your stay now at plottwistbooks.com. Welcome to Bookstore Explorer, the show where we go behind the shelves with booksellers to celebrate the magic of independent bookstores. I'm author and bookseller Matt Browning. This week, we're in New Hampshire to learn about the historic Toadstool Bookshop, which first opened its doors back in 1972. Like Stacey Harden on last week's episode about the Peoria Book Rack, Emerson Cisterre had been visiting the Toadstool since he was 7 years old. Now, he owns it. Emerson discusses the shop's long history, how he came to take the reins, and how he honors the store's identity while also incorporating some changes along the way. Now, we did have some connection issues here and there, so you'll notice some spottiness that I've tried to take care of best I can, but it doesn't put a damper on what is truly a wonderful conversation with someone whose passion for books is so evident. So come along as we go bookstore exploring. Emerson, welcome to Bookstore Explorer. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a real treat.
Now, you are recording somewhere in the shop, right? I'm seeing sort of an office set up behind you.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm recording in our back office. It's my sort of permanent office back here, and then it's where we do a lot of our online fulfillment. And also, I think probably like most bookstores, we store just random odds and ends that we come across throughout air that are sent to us, and have a massive catalog somewhere around here. And yes, that's where I am right now.
Are there two locations to your store?
There are, yes. Yeah, okay. Two. There's one in Peterborough, New Hampshire, and then there's one in Keene, New Hampshire.
So we typically start out the show by having the guest sort of walk us through the physical space so that our listeners can kind of get an idea of what we're talking about. So I don't know. Do you want to pick one of the two? Is one a flagship?
Yeah, sure. The Peterborough store is the original store, and that was started in 1972 by Willard Williams and his family. And then it was started in a small building, probably about 250 or 300 yards from where it's currently located. And then in 1992, they purchased a then abandoned supermarket and renovated it to fit the bookstore. So it's really cool in the sense that at the time they had full control over the interior design components of the store. There were no pre-existing shelves or anything like that. And so the way that they laid it out is a little bit unorthodox, but it's, in my opinion, it's incredibly charming. And I grew up coming to the store. I grew up in the town next to where the store is located in Dublin, New Hampshire.
And what do you mean by unorthodox? I'm curious as to what.
Sure. I think the standard layout of most bookstores is following some sort of grid system, or having parallel and perpendicular lines to some capacity. Mm-hmm. But the way that the store in Peterborough was laid out, it actually features a lot of curves, and so there are very few hard left, right turns that any one of our browsers is going to make when they're taking their time in the store. One of the most important features of the store, whenever anyone comes in, is the first thing they see. And you have, you know, the front table, which is critically important to the sort of atmosphere of any store. But just to the left of our front table is our New England section, and our primarily amongst that is the feature on local authors. We are really spoiled in this area to have authors like Cy Montgomery and Howard Mansfield, Lita Judge, Beth Kroms, Caldecott winning authors, National Book Award finalists, all of whom are regular drop-ins at the store.
Well, sometimes that section kind of gets relegated to the back or a little bit hidden. You don't often see it like right up front spotlight.
Yeah, it's really important to us that it is one of the first things that people see when they come into the store, that they do see that there's a sense of place in our store, that we are primarily a store that has roots in the Monadnock region of New Hampshire, and we're very proud of that. We love where we're from, and we love the people that have made it possible for the store to be around for 50 years. And we're very, very grateful to them. And we really love reminding them of where they're from and giving them opportunities to learn more about the things that they interact with on a daily basis. I mean, the people they interact with on a daily basis. So that's sort of the first thing that anyone sees when they come into the store is our New England shelves, and featured amongst them is our local author shelf. And then there is obviously the front table, which is three 6x6 tables end to end. And that's where we feature most of our hardcover nonfiction titles. And then behind that will be our fiction section. And then you kind of see the sort of center focus of the store, which is also designed in a way that is meant to highlight what is the most desired type of reading for our browsers, which would be literary or general fiction. And we have that set up again in a curve. And so it functions in a lot of ways as almost a vestibule of a church, and that it really brings the size of the store down in it. And that's where we also host a lot of our author events, right in the center of the store. And by having that space in the center of the store, we can create a really intimate experience for our author events, as we're not in an auditorium or sort of stadium seating. It's, you know, chairs right next to one another in and amongst our general and literary fiction. And so it creates a really, really wonderful atmosphere for all of our events.
I'll bet. I mean, how much do you have in terms of square footage? You said a former supermarket, so that could be huge or it could be small.
Yeah, it's about 9,000. And we have about, in Peterborough, we have about 75,000 titles. Peterborough, both new and used.
Now, I want to get to the point when you took over the shop, but let's first rewind all the way back to the beginning. What do you know about the origins of this space? You said it opened in 72?
Yeah. It's something that I've really taken a huge interest in. And we were actually just doing some repainting, and I was finding all these things that had been sort of stashed away for, you know, 30, 40 years. And some obviously were derelict and had to be thrown. Some of them I actually keep on a bulletin board right with my monitor here, so that I can sort of, I'm always reminded of the history of the store. But yeah, 1972 by the William Willard and his siblings. And it was a family run store from the very beginning. It did well in the beginning. And it was, in Willard's opinion, and it's up there, the success of the Toadstool is entirely due to the community. We're really lucky in the type of people who have decided to spend their lives in the region, and who, what they prioritize in their daily lives. And we find that they, the bookstore, and they enjoy spending there. But yeah, so it started in 1992, and then in the mid 80s, two other Toadstools, one in Milford, New Hampshire, and then in Keene, New Hampshire. And in 1992, the original store in Peterborough, like I said before, moved what is called the Centertown building. It's very small, like just a couple thousand, maybe a couple thousand square feet, very, very small, to where it is currently located in Depot Square. And there's some great stories that I've been told, the sort of book brigade hand of the books from the old store to the new store, like 3 days or something like that. And I've had people come in, and it's been wonderful taking over as so many people share their history with the store over those 50 years. It's been great. Yeah.
I mean, you said yourself, you were one of those people that grew up in the shop. How long had you been coming? Do you remember some of your earliest memories of being there?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. Yeah. I mean, I've been coming to the Toadstool since I could read. It was the place that I went to with my mom to get books that were she had to read at, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. I've been coming here my whole life, and it's such a heartwarming place to come to, especially when I was living away from whether as a teacher teaching in New York, and immediately prior to living in California and Colorado, coming home was always sort of complete once I had visited the Total and I had gotten to spend some time there. And that's when I really knew I was home and I was back in the Manhattan. Yeah, I've been coming here my whole life.
At what point did you decide, or did you even not even decide, but even start to entertain the notion of owning the place? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting. Looking back, like obviously hindsight is 20. As a kid, I used to speak with my parents and kind of joke about, you know, what I wanted to do with my life, this sort of thing or that sort of thing. And I, from, you know, age 7, I said I wanted a bookstore. But it's hard to find, you know, sort of like a linear checklist to get to bookstore owner. It's not necessarily something you can school for and then be like, all right, here I've done all the things, submit my application and own your bookstore. Mm-hmm. So I was a teacher. I got my master's degree as a teacher for 3 years. But right around the turn from 2019 to 2020, I was working in an admissions office at a school that I was living and working at on Island, and I got a text from my dad, like, hey, the Toadstool's for sale. And I chuckled and I was like, oh, wouldn't that be fun? And didn't really think much of it. And then about 2 years later, in the spring of 2022, I was finding that it might be time for a career change in some capacity. And, you know, I was in conversations with my parents about what avenues are there. And almost jokingly, my dad again put forth like, hey, like, you know, the Toadstool is still for sale. And I was like, all right. I mean, I get, do you want to meet with the owner? And he was like, yeah, we could do that. And so we went down and we met with Willard very quickly. I think Willard and I found our opinion on bookselling was very similar. Our opinion on the purpose and value of physical literature was very similar. Store meant to Willard as the owner by that time of 50 years, and to me as someone who owned the Toadstool as one of the more important, if not the most important things for me to visit from home, the importance of the Toadstool to the community resonated with both of us. And so we made the decision at that time. See if it was possible. But a month later, I submitted my notice to the school I was working at that time in Maine. But after that, I started my, you know, quote unquote apprenticeship with Willard and in August of 2022. And by January of 2023, we had purchased the store.
Did you feel a little bit like you were coming to an interview, being interviewed by someone who was owned this thing for 50 years, and here you come?
Oh, what? Yeah.
Was absolutely that intimidating for you?
I mean, it felt like it was a constant interview. Even when I started, you know, in August, it was an interview the whole way through. And he was right to do that. He was right to do that because it's he making sure that my interest in the store was not transient. Nor was my interest in the store based on something other than my appreciation for the spirit that is the Toadstool and my appreciation for what the bookstore in this community can do for the people of the community, having been one of them. And so he was absolutely right to sort of make sure that I was serious about it. And that I was approaching it with the right intention. It was daunting. It was challenging. It was an incredibly steep learning curve. And I often kind of say that if you ever walk into any retail or customer facing business or industry, you think for a second that looks easy. It is probably because the people doing it are very good at that job. It is not easy. on any level. But Willard and his wife, Holly, who worked with him for the majority of those 50 years, they really were exhibits in excellence in the bookselling community. And I'm very grateful for them for letting me learn from them for the 5 months that I was apprenticing under them.
It doesn't sound like you had bookselling experience prior to this. Did you have any sort of retail experience at all?
No, none. I had retail experience, simply school and college, like finding jobs in the summer. Mm-hmm. But I had no retail experience from a managerial standpoint, and no bookselling experience whatsoever. And it was, like I said, a significant learning curve. The bit, I think, again, and it was Willard's sort of detail-minded approach those 5 months, was that he knew that I was approaching every single thing I was doing at the time with the best faith and the best of intentions. And so when I would watch him, or I would watch Holly, or I would watch someone else doing anything, I would make sure that I was, making notes of these things mentally, and I was inculcating any sort of habits that they had, or things that the customers were commenting on and they liked. And so it was really an effort, and almost an effort in study for those 5 months, of just trying to take in every single thing I could.
Well, I think a person can learn the ropes of business management, but it sounds like you really came with the love of literature and books. And I was doing, I call it my pre-show research, but basically I just cyber stalk. So, your first name is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, I read in an article. Is that true?
Yeah, it is actually.
It sounds like you come from a literary family, and those values were already there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my paternal grandfather was an English teacher. My uncle is a science teacher. My father is a lawyer. He's a very loved man. And my mother was a preschool teacher. So the approach and enjoyment and gratification found in books has always been a part of my life, and the impact that I can have has also always been apparent and made apparent by my parents and my family.
I also read that you taught a course in Lord of the Rings. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. Tolkien is, I mean, I think anyone listening to this knows the importance of Tolkien and the brilliance of Tolkien. And it was fun to design that course. It was a senior elective, so it was good to sort of give a lot of my seniors a little bit of an introduction to how college courses work. And so we would approach lots of different things, from national identity to economics to environmentalism to themes of war, all in modern interpretation or modern instantiations through Tolkien's work and what Tolkien was saying about these various things that were happening in the world, and how he was interpreting them, and what he was doing for Britain in that time. Tolkien is I think about Tolkien way too much, quite frankly.
You can get away with it as a bookseller, though.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a couple weeks ago that we were doing like a little video series on like what our perfect Christmas gift was, and everyone has these great little Christmas gifts, and I'm over there holding like a 2100 page volume of the Lord of the Rings trilogy with notes and appendices and all these different just nonsense, and I'm like, it's the perfect Christmas gift for anybody. And I look back at it, and I'm like, maybe one person ever even thought it might be a good gift for them.
You talked us about the local authors and the regional things that you carry. What else would you say, is a focus of the shop? What are some of the other genres that sell well, mm-hmm. that are popular?
Yeah, no, that's a unique thing to think about when you have 70,000 or 75,000 different titles. And it was one of I think it was truly one of the smartest things Willard did in his training of me, that for about the first 3.5 months, I was not allowed to do anything other than unbox books. That was all I could do for 3.5 months was unbox books and put books on shelves. And what that forced me to do was it forced me to learn what was selling, because I was only ever unboxing. Majority of things I was unboxing were reorders. We were getting back in stock. And so I saw and had to learn very quickly what was selling, just because it was always in front of my face. We make an effort, and I think a lot of bookstores do, but we make an effort to hand select every single title that comes into the store. We want to make sure that someone in the store has seen it, and someone in the store believes that it is contributing to the variety that we have, and ensuring that what stocking that title says about the store is an accurate reflection of what the community feels about itself, or it is something that we feel that the community may value in having them pushed towards.
That's impressive for the amount of books you carry.
Yeah, it was something that Willard was very adamant with. He was like, you're going to sit here and you're going to pick out every single one. And I was like, okay, that's what I'll do. And it really is a joy, because it gives you a huge amount of facility with the inventory when someone comes in and asks you for something. You can kind of pull something out that you maybe haven't seen or isn't necessarily something that you might have read, but you have it in memory or you have it in your mind. A lot of the things that sell very well here are that sort of literary fiction component. So things like, most recently, one of my favorite books of 2023, The Northwoods by Daniel Mason, things of sort of that ilk. We do really, really well with histories and sciences. Biographies are a huge component. And then a lot of independent authors as well, or sort of emerging authors, people really keen on trying to be at the cutting edge, I think, in this area of literature in a lot of ways.
I usually ask this question probably a little more towards the end of the discussion, but I want to just throw it in now because it fits. And what are some of your favorite books, and you probably already have talked about one of them, to hand sell to customers who ask you for recommendations?
Oh yeah, that's the joy of the job, you know, like that really is. And I mean, that's something that we talk about all the time, me and the staff and me and my parents, is like, fundamentally, what is the function of the bookstore? Because at the end of the day, if someone is just looking for a quick, easy, clean transaction, and to procure a good for the least amount of financial transfer, they can do that online. They can get the book, they can order a book faster and cheaper online. And so fundamentally, what is the function of the store? And it comes down to exactly what you're asking, which is the personal recommendation being made by a person, not by an algorithm. And so that really is the core function of the bookstore, is that idea of hand selling. And some of my favorites are certainly Northwoods by Daniel Mason. It's one of my favorite books, not only of the year, but I've read in quite some time. I tell people all the time that the charm and the brilliance of that book is that he really is kind of one of those very serious literary authors, and that he's you know, got the ability and the writing style, and he approaches the subject matter that is quite profound. But in that book, there are moments when you as the reader kind of think like, well, it would be really fun if he did this thing, but he's very serious. And, you know, he's a, you know, Pulitzer Prize finalist author. He won't do that because that's a little, you know, unserious. But then he does it. He does the unserious thing. He does the fun thing. And it makes the book all the more enjoyable because of it, because he's allowing you to smile while you're also taking in this, you know, sort of deep contemplation of time and family and land and meaning. And it also makes you smile at very various moments.
I didn't read that when it came out, but
sure.
It's funny you should mention that, because we have an Airbnb component with our shop. And when you stay there,
oh, cool.
you get to have an honorary staff pick. So there is a lady coming tomorrow. When we're taping this, it's tomorrow. And that was her pick.
That's awesome. That is such a cool idea. Yeah, that's a really cool idea that they trying to, you know, give someone who's coming to stay at the Airbnb a little bit of involvement in the bookstore. That's really cool.
I already wanted to read that one, but your description has just catapulted it up the TBR list.
Another one that came out this year, Benjamin Labateau's The Maniac. Benjamin Labateau is a Chilean author. He lives in The Hague, Netherlands, and he is typically in two books now. One is called When We Cease to Understand the World, and that was by the New York Review of Books. A few years ago, it's a thinner book, and that sort of, I think, brought into a very niche audience of the sort of people who read books about philosophical history and its interplay with mathematics, and how those two things intersect and what they can tell us about our reality. And I think that book sort of stayed on the periphery, despite it being extremely well received and extremely well regarded by the people that read it. But then it came out in, I think it was September. The Maniac is really unique because it's very difficult to put it in a genre. It is a fictionalized secondhand biography that is effectively a compilation of letters. It's difficult to kind of describe how the structure of this book works, in that each chapter is a an account of a person that was a contemporary friend or lover of the physicist and mathematician John von Neumann, who lived in the early 20th century and was a early proponent and inventor of artificial intelligence. He was widely regarded as one of the most intelligent mathematicians of the time and a contemporary of Einstein, and worked on the Manhattan Project, as a whole host of other things. And so each chapter is a different character that appeared in his actual life that Labateau has read accounts of what they said and what they thought and what they saw of John von Neumann. And then Labateau has fictionalized a document that is, again, from firsthand account's perspective, expresses the sentiments, feelings of these people about von Neumann. By doing that, he encompasses people ranging from von Neumann's daughter all the way to Einstein at one point. And it really kind of piggybacked itself off of the sort of Oppenheimer frenzy of the summer. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the most intense books I have ever read in my life. It is from end to end. I felt like I was about to snap it in half when I was holding it. It takes off like, you know, like a race car from the first chapter all the way through the end in terms of who the subjects of the characters, the chapters are, what is that in this man's life, John von Neumann, circles that he is operating in. And what it really comes down to at the end is an understanding that the deification of specific types of genes as infallible is a really dangerous thing that we as people do. Because at the end of the day, while they may be, you know, intelligent or hyper, you know, erudite in these specific areas of life, in most other areas, they are just normal people. And giving them this carte blanche approach to their opinion is a very dangerous thing. It's a fantastic book. It is not, and it is not a, it's not a sort of feel good, read it all in one go type of thing. but it was wonderful. And I don't think there are many authors right now that are capable of, or maybe capable is the wrong word, but are daring enough to try and write that the way that Labateau wrote that book.
You know, it is so fascinating to listen to you talk about books.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I say that to kind of swing it back to, you know, you took over, you're about a year into ownership of the shop now.
Yeah.
And as we've established, you were taking over from shop owners who had had it for decades. Were you worried about the reception you would get from customers?
Absolutely.
And what has that reception been like? Because as I was just saying, listening to you talk about books is wonderful to listen to. So I imagine it was a positive response that you got.
Yeah, it was deeply nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. That because I knew how much this meant to people, because it meant that much to me, and I knew how much people cared about what was going to happen to it, and I knew how much real joy people take and continue, I hope, to take in identifying where they are from with the Toadstool. And that means a huge amount. It really means a huge amount. It was deeply nerve-wracking. It's something that I still talk about all the time now. You know, we're about 2 weeks away from our anniversary. And I still think about it all the time. You know, are the people that have been coming to the Toadstool 50 years, are they going to come back? Am I doing the job the right way? Am I making sure that the people that have kept this store for 50 years are going to continue to come in here and spend their time and share moments with their friends and their family and introduce it to future generations? It was very, very nerve-wracking. Every time that I hear any kind words, it really does mean the world, because I know how much it means to the community, the store, because again, it meant that much to me growing up, continues to, and so it's been a wonderful experience, and I'll save them what Willard used to say, which is that, you know, I don't think there are many other communities in the world that could or would continue to support a bookstore like this for this long, and take pride in doing so. And so we're nothing if not immensely grateful to the community of the Monadnock region, and deeply indebted to them for their commitment and their love and passion for the store.
Have you made a lot of changes?
I asked, I think it was about a week or before we took over. So it was actually right about this time last year. But when was the last time you tried something a little risky, a little new? Mm-hmm. And he kind of smiled and he's like, well, we got computers back in 1995. and I said, oh boy, okay, sure. So we have made changes. We have made changes. They are any change that is going to be apparent to one of our browsers is a deeply vetted and considered change. It needs to be put through, you know, the real here on two different fronts. One is the financial front. Why are we making this change? Financially, do we need to make this change financially? Is it a change that is necessitated by some financial variable? Then on the flip side of that is the sort of cultural rigor that it needs, that any decision we make needs to go through is, you know, what does it say about the store? Is it in keeping with the spirit of the store? Why would we make this change? Is it necessary to make this change? Will it alter the experience of someone who has come in 50 years if we make this change. And if we do, and it does, was it absolutely necessary? But that said, yeah, we've made a number of different changes, you know, trying to make the browsing experience slightly more intuitive, make it slightly more modern, bring some more modern categories into the portfolio of offerings that we have. And you know, it's been wonderful. And it invariably every change we make gets noticed. I mean, I sort of got, if I changed the light bulbs in here to a different shade of yellow, I would get an email from someone. but that's, in a lot of ways, that is a testament to the amount that people care about this store, and the amount of emotional value and currency that they've placed in their memory of the store. And it's wonderful to get that type of feedback and investment from the people that frequent the store. So yeah, we've made a number of changes that have been very long discussions, only for us to sort of, like, you know, it took us about a week to decide that we were going to break horror books away from suspense books, make them their own section, because we had to go through the process of you know, making sure that this decision had a reason behind it, and it was not an arbitrary choice we were just making for the fun.
I think it's wonderful that you do that, you know, and I'm sure it's appreciated.
I really hope so. I really hope so. And I think it is on the basis, on the level that one comment that has been consistent and continuous for this past year was, it's very evident how much me and my parents care about what is happening. It's evident to people when they, I mean, that the bookstore is still being cared for, and that it is still respected. That is, it is not only respected by the people that work there, it's not only respected by the people that shop there, but it's respected by the people that that own it. That it has its own identity, and it is not just a one for one example, or a one for one sort of copy of my interests or someone else's interests. It's that it's a reflection of the community, and because of that, decisions need to be very thoughtful and considered.
You know, I don't know how eloquent I can put this next question, but you know, at the end of the day, when you're finishing up your day and you're turning out the lights, do you ever think back on the fact that you were once a 7-year-old boy walking through this same space, and how does that make you feel to now own it?
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing. I often think that I'm you know, one of the luckiest people in the world, because so few people get to have a dream as a 7-year-old and then at 29 get to sit there and say, you know, 7-year-old me would be thrilled right now. And it's incredible. It's wonderful. It's a moment that I think about often, when especially we're open from 10 to 6, 6 days a week, and then 10 to 5 on Sundays. But usually in the early to midweek, that 5 to 6 o'clock hour is quiet. And so sometimes I will just sort of sit at the front counter and just look at the bookstore and look at the maybe couple people that are in there patiently going through. And it's a moment of real and I think rare peace and satisfaction, in that there's not much more I could ask for in my life than those moments of getting to look at the bookstore and getting to see people finding ways that they're going to enjoy their time and spend their time and share their time with others through books and through books that we're offering. And it's a wonderful treat.
That's a nice segue into what is always my final question, which is a bit of a romanticized kind of question.
Sure.
And that is the fact that people always say bookshops are magical places. So I always ask each guest, what does that mean to you when you hear a bookshop's a magical place?
That's a great question. Yeah. I think what it means is that the way that I have interpreted that feeling now, as someone who has attempted to stimulate that same feeling in people, when they come in, I try to make sure that people feel that they've stepped into something that is, you know, quote unquote, magical. And I think what it boils down to is the opportunity to connect as one person to a seemingly endless amount of other people and their thoughts, and to find resonance and commonality in those other people, whether they're authors or fictional characters or factual characters that existed, and to find community in, you know, in that physical space with the other people shopping for books, but also in the books, and to continue to try and find connection and resonance within people's selves, and allow them to give them an opportunity to form an identity for themselves that they feel is representative of who they really are, whether that's by supplying them with books that are representative of their interests, or supplying them with books that are representative of their geographical location, or by offering books that people are aspiring to, or that covers topics that people are aspiring to learn about. I think it's a space that gives people the opportunity to connect with others across time, you know, across both reality and fiction. And I think that really what it comes down to for me is the opportunity that bookstores present for people to make connection with other people, or make connection with themselves.
Very well said.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
So before we go, tell folks where they can find you. Toss out your web address, your social media handles, and your physical address if folks are geographically close to you.
Yeah. No, our web address is www.toadbooks.com. Our Instagram is Toadstool Bookshop. Our phone number is 924-3543. Located at 12 Depot Square, Peterborough, New York, and 12 Emerald Street, Keene, New York. And we would love to talk with you, and we do our very best to either phone call or email a personal endeavor, personal expression of our staff and our store. So please, you know, feel free to call, and if you'd like a recommendation or you want to give us a recommendation, we'll be all the merrier. We really hope to hear from anyone. It's a treat.
Well, cool. Emerson, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and to get to know more about the shop. And thanks again. I wish you the best of luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It was awesome.
Bookstore Explorer is produced and hosted by me, Matt Browning. Our theme music is Come Right Back to You by Max Hickson. You can follow all my bookstore explorations at bookstoreexplorer.com. or on Instagram and Facebook at Bookstore Explorer. And follow us on Twitter at Bookstore EXPLR. Thanks for listening.